Welcome back to Shannery Miss. I'm your host, Yetta. It's my pleasure to introduce one of my very favorite people. I think perhaps the most important voice in the world today. He's the one expert who can tell it like it is not afraid to do so, and has devoted the time to being prepared to answer questions regarding why Muslims kill. What is it about Islam that causes some 99% of terrorist acts perpetrated in the world today to be conducted by fundamentalist Muslims? There's very few people that have the courage or the compassion to answer that question, but one of those who does is IQ Al-Rasuli. IQ, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to play a clip. It's going to be the first clip. We're going to actually have three stories this morning. All three stories are based on the same theme. The clip is going to begin and end with a why question, as will be the story that I'm going to report to you out of Fort Hood, Texas, regarding Hassan, the mass murderer, as to why did he kill, what was his motivation. We're going to tell this begin with this story of Christian being beheaded and being sawed up into pieces, arms and legs on opposite sides, by Muslims in New Jersey. And then we're going to turn our attention to the destruction of Christian churches and Christian families in Egypt by the scores. And each of these has a singular theme, and that is the journalist is asking why. So let's begin. Scott's going to play the first tape, and then based upon what you hear, maybe you can answer the question that the journalist is unable to answer, IQ.
A gruesome double murder mystery tonight in New Jersey. Police say who did it isn't the mystery. Someone's under arrest, in fact. The mystery, they say, is why the accused killer, and this is the gruesome part, cut off two men's heads and hands. The victims are reportedly from Jersey City, but their remains were found buried in a town southwest of Philadelphia. I would assume Jeff Begays with the story. He's in Jersey City for us. Jeffrey?
Yeah, Bill, shock and sadness in this community tonight. People who know the victims say they are recent immigrants from Egypt, 25, 27-year-old roommates who worked hard to send money back to family in Egypt. How they died isn't a mystery tonight. Why they were murdered is. On the streets of Jersey City along Bergen Avenue, to the naked eye, it's not obvious, but to members of the close-knit Coptic Orthodox Church, the pain is real.
It's a shock, you know what I mean? Like, something like this don't happen to people like that.
Now that they know two members of this church have been brutally murdered, but no one in this community seems to know why.
It was crazy what happened to these two, and do they deserve it? No. Was it expected? Never. And that's just as sad.
The two victims, identified by friends as Hani Tawadros and Amdad Kundis, were found buried in a backyard in Buena Vista, New Jersey, last Thursday. Today, police announced the arrest. 28-year-old Yusuf Ibrahim is in custody.
Numerous state police personnel and multiple other agencies worked tirelessly to bring about a quick arrest and a substantial body of evidence in this crime.
Investigators say Ibrahim shot and killed the victims, severed their heads and hands, and buried the remains at a Buena Vista house. Back in Jersey City, friends of the victims are praying that police will have the answers to the questions that now haunt them. Privately, some here wonder if it had something to do with the victims' religion.
They leave it for it was a detective and the investigation.
So far, police have not revealed a motive for the grisly murders as the suspect sits behind bars, waiting for his day in court. Authorities today called the suspect ruthless and calculating. They also say that he belongs behind bars, and that's where he remains tonight.
All right, IQ. There was a question of why. There was a question of motive, which is also why. And then the question of, I wonder if religion has anything to do with it. Can you answer my questions, IQ?
I think you have the most stupid people who run your security system. You have also the most stupid officers in your national defense, or you call it the homeland security. It is obvious that the one who killed them is a Muslim.
Yep.
From his name. I didn't even ask the question. I know from his name he's a Muslim.
Yusuf Ibrahim.
Who did he kill? He killed Christians. How did he kill them? He decapitated them. Why did he do that? Muhammad 47.4. That Muhammad, chapter 47, verse 4, says, therefore, when you meet the unbelievers, smite at their necks. It's not ambiguous.
No.
He murdered them because they're Christian. It's a matter of religion. Yes.
Cut off their heads. And 533, it speaks of cutting off their hands.
Yes.
Specifically.
Left hand, right foot, left foot, right hand. Yes.
Right. Exactly.
So why is it so difficult for your police officers not to come to conclusion? Why is it difficult for your stupid journalists not to come to the same conclusion? Why?
Yeah, you know, what's amazing, too, is that the Quran, because it has so many internal conflicts and contradictions, because it's one man's insane rantings, it actually has two places where it talks about the law of abrogation, which is when Allah contradicts himself and brings something that's different than what he said previously, that the more recent statement is the one that prevails over the thing that it contradicts. The last surah that was allegedly handed down, but the last one that Muhammad came up with, was the fifth surah, correct? Well, nine was the second to last. Nine sets up the fifth. So I'm glad you mentioned nine, because nine is really important in this regard. What happens in the ninth surah sets up the fifth surah, when we're going to get to this murder as to why this occurred. Muhammad, by the ninth surah, had overhunted Jews. And he had realized that there really were no more Jews for him to be able to hunt. The last Jewish outpost that could be reached within camel reach ride of Yathrib, today's Medina, was Kabar. He had already murdered all of the Jews and sent them, raped the women and enslaved the children of the three Jewish communities that were in Yathrib, today's Medina. And on the way back from his failed raid of Mecca, he brutalized, terrorized the Jewish farming community in Kabar. There were no more Jews to hunt. And when you're like Muhammad or Genghis Khan, which would be an example, and you've created an economy strictly based upon being a pirate, stealing for a living with armed raids, you have to provide fresh prey, fresh meat all the time, or they'll turn on you. And so having overhunted Jews, the ninth surah is all about calling any Muslim that won't engage in jihad a hypocrite, so that there can be no peaceful Muslims, and then saying, the enemy is out there. The enemy is the Byzantine communities. That's why you need to cross the desert to kill them. And in the fifth surah, Muhammad redefines infidel to say that infidels are Christians, since they are now the prey. And so why did the Muslim kill the Christians?
Because Muhammad told them to. Because their Allah told them so. Their God told them so. And their God, Allah, I want to repeat it for the billionth time, is not God, and most certainly not the God of the Israelites, of Abraham, of Yeshua, of anybody.
Yep, that is for
sure. It's a pagan God.
Yeah, the Allah was the largest idol of rock idols in the Kaaba, which was a rock shrine to rock idols in Mecca. And so he simply took the black stone, which was the biggest and most revered of the 360 some odd rock idols in the Kaaba, and said, that one right there, that's the real God, where all the rest of these rocks, those are pretend gods.
You know, it's amazing that you and I and anybody, in fact, we're not geniuses, neither you nor I. Anybody who reads the Quran dispassionately and has got two brain cells of logic cannot come to any conclusion other than the conclusions that you and I have come to. It is impossible.
It's actually...
All your security systems are coming to the wrong ones. All your media are coming to the wrong ones.
It's actually laughable up to the point where Muhammad becomes a ruthless terrorist and a pedophile. I mean, up to the point Muhammad becomes a rapist and a pedophile and incestuous and a kidnapper and a slave trader and a mass murderer, the story that is presented, particularly when you put it in chronological order, of Muhammad's life in his Quran, I mean, it is absolutely hilarious. It goes to the point of being so stupid, it's funny. Now, after a while, and you transition past the satanic verses where Muhammad, for sex, power, and money, capitulated with the Meccans and said, "All right, you can have three other rock goddesses in the Kaaba, and we'll make a foursome of goddesses and gods, and that'll be cool, and everybody will love one another." And he was booted out of Mecca when he said that it was Satan that gave him that Quranic revelation, where he then rode the winged ass to the non-existent temple in Jerusalem, where he said, "Yeah, I was over there in Jerusalem. I met in the temple with all the big shots," not knowing that it had been destroyed 600 years previously. And then rode up to heaven by way of hell. His first stop to heaven was in hell, where he said that it was all the inhabitants were women who were hanging by meat hooks from their breasts. And yet this story and this man, who was a pedophile, who was a rapist, who was a kidnapper, who was a slave trader, who was a mass murderer and a ruthless terrorist, provides the religious fodder for a quarter of the world's population. It is, if it wasn't so deadly, it would be funny.
It isn't funny. It is deadly. It is the most virulent virus that has ever insinuated itself in the mind of humanity.
That's true. Yeah. This is another story. It's a why question. Fort Hood, Texas is the dateline. The prosecutors pursuing the death penalty against Army psychiatrist accused in the 2009 Fort Hood shooting rampage will soon begin trying to answer a difficult key question. Okay, now, I don't know if you're up to this, IQ, but they're braced now to try to answer a difficult but key question. Why did Major Nadal Hassan attack his fellow soldiers in the worst mass shooting ever in a U.S. military base? Now, can you answer that question for us?
It's so difficult. I mean, that question is incredibly difficult to answer. I mean, you need to be a jackass to answer it. A real jackass. Only a jackass can answer such a question.
I guess so.
But think, you know, I can't believe that these are lawyers. Who gave them a degree in law? I cannot understand that.
Do you know that Hassan wrote a confession to his planned murder before he perpetrated it? He laid out the entire manifesto. He says, "I'm doing this in the name of Islam. I'm doing this for Allah. I'm doing this based upon the orders in the Quran." And he began his defense saying, "The evidence is going to show that I'm guilty, and here's why I did it." It's my pleasure to have IQ Arasuli with us. IQ was born in Iraq. That is his country. He now lives in Europe. He has devoted himself to coming to understand why Muslims kill. And since Muslims are the most deadly force on earth today, it is a very important question. So here in Fort Hood, the journalists and the lawyers are trying to ascertain why did Major Nasal Hassan attack his fellow soldiers? That was their key question. Do you know that the judge in this particular case, there's two aspects of this that you'll find interesting, IQ. It'll probably just make you mad, but nonetheless, it's interesting. The judge in this case has forbidden the prosecution to bring in any evidence that ties this case to Islam. She says this will not be a referendum on religion. So any evidence that ties the motive to Islam has been disallowed. And second is that the United States government has decided that this was not an act of Islamic terrorism, that it is an act of workplace violence, and that there will not be any testimony regarding jihad and terrorism. Now, how does that strike you?
If I were the lawyer for the victims, I would tell the judge to go to hell.
Ah, but you can't
and
do that.
Even if I don't tell the judge to go to hell, with all due respect,
no, you can't
I
do
will
that.
Bring it into the question. I will mention it, and the judge can, you know, can do whatever they want.
Yeah,
how can you go to a court of law and
it's not a court of law?
Back in front.
It's not a court of law. Major Hassan is not being tried in a court of law.
So it's a kangaroo court.
Well, of course, he's been tried in a military court. The same thing with Bradley Manning, or I should call him Chelsea Manning. That's how he wants to be known there. No, it's a military court, which means that the jury is comprised of all military officers. The judge is a military officer, and the lawyers are military officers. It's all rigged. The government can say that this military trial, because we control the military, will not be a trial on a referendum on Islam or Islamic terrorism. We will not allow any discussion on either of those two issues. It is an issue of workplace violence, and so you need to come up with a motive apart from Islam.
Yeah, with all due respect, if I were an officer in Fort Hood, mm-hmm. and this happened,
mm-hmm.
and anybody tells me not to use it, I promise you, I would go to the anywhere. I will mention it everywhere. They can dismiss me from the army. They can do whatever they want.
They would court-martial you.
Fine.
You would go to prison.
Can they court-martial 20, 30, 40 people? The answer is no.
Yes, they can.
If 20, 30, 40 people, officers, stand up,
they
cannot be court-martialed.
Yeah, no, they would be. All of them. That would be the nature of it. It's true, but here's the issue. Are there 20 or 30 people who are officers in the U.S. military that are willing to forego their freedom to let their fellow Americans know the truth? Are they willing to stand up for the 13 men and women who were murdered by this Muslim in the name of Islam? He was screaming Allahu Akbar as he was killing them. Are there 20 men and women in the American military who have the courage, who have the good sense to stand up and be accounted and to let their fellow Americans know why these men were killed? Will they honor the deaths of these men by sacrificing their freedom to tell the truth? And the answer is no.
No.
The answer is no.
Yeah.
You know, we have this myth of the bravery of the American troops and them sacrificing their lives and risking their lives to keep us free. And you won't find 20 American officers who are willing to risk their freedom to honor the deaths of those 13 men and women who were murdered by this Muslim.
Yeah, yeah. From my point of view, and I'm not an American citizen, if 20 mm-hmm. to 30 officers stand up and do that, the American people will not tolerate for them to be court-martialed. You know what? I think there would be a revolution.
Yeah, well, we could use one of those. That would be true, because
America needs a revolution today.
Yeah. What I've done in the nature of this program, IQ, you join us during the second hour, but I've changed the introduction of the program to saying that that the fastest growing segment of our society is those of us who realize that that political and religious institutions, military institutions, and economic institutions are the problem. They are not the solution. And therefore, it isn't by modifying political or religious institutions that we're going to solve the problems that plague our world. We have to realize that they are the problem. They are the source of the problem. And you cannot resolve the problem by sending a different cast of characters to Washington, D.C., or electing a different cast of characters as judges or a different cast of characters to be the generals. These institutions are the problem. We'll return with IQ Arasuli and to Shattering Myths after the commercial break, and we're going to turn our attention to what is happening in Egypt. There's a backstory in Egypt that is not being reported, which is the massacre and the genocide of Copt Christians. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. We're here with IQ Arasuli. This next story is just so incredibly sad, and I'd like you, IQ, if you can help us understand why this is occurring in just 1 week during the pro-Muslim Brotherhood protests that have erupted in Egypt now that Morsi has been removed from power, replaced by the military junta. At least 50 Christian churches and schools have been looted and set ablaze. In one recent case, Islamists torched a Franciscan school and then paraded three nuns in the streets like prisoners of war, before a Muslim woman finally stood up and said, "You ought not be doing that." This campaign of intimidation has targeted the homes and businesses of Christians, who make up about 10% of the population of Egypt. The Muslim Brotherhood continues its attacks on churches to implement their schemes, which include ethnic cleansing and forced displacement of the Copts. Each of churches are part of the blueprint by the Muslim Brotherhood to lure other Islamic groups into the frenzy. Why is this occurring, IQ? You have a religious cause. Why wouldn't the religions tolerate and accept and embrace other religions? Why are they murdering the Copts?
Will you allow me?
Sure.
Okay. Before Muhammad died, the last sermon he gave, he said no two religions should exist in the Jazeera Arabia, that means the Arabian Peninsula. And since his death, they haven't existed, actually.
Right.
In my country, Iraq, for those who, of course, don't know much about Iraq, except they knew about Saddam Hussein. In my country, Iraq, they used to have 150,000 Jews. These Jews existed in Iraq since the 6th century B.C., 586 B.C. to be exact, when the Babylonians took the Jews from Israel or Judea into Iraq. So they preceded the Islamic invasion by 1,100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Today, you will not find a single Jew in Iraq left.
Correct.
And the Muslims used to say, Ba'd al-Sabt, Ijil Ahad, which means in Arabic, translated from Arabic, but after Saturday comes Sunday. That means after the Jews come the Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly what's happening in Iraq now. In 2003, we used to have between 1.25 and 1.3 million Christians. Some of the very oldest Christian communities in existence. Today, less than 200,000 in Iraq. It is ethnic cleansing.
That's genocide.
Islam is always ethnic cleansing. They have destroyed over 250 million people in the last 1,400 years.
250 million people. Yeah, it sounds like the same story of the Turks coming back from their defeat by the Tsarist Russians in World War I, and as they were coming back from defeat, just as every time Mohammed lost a battle, they had to find an easy passage to satiate their bloodlust and their covetousness, and they went and annihilated the Armenian Christians.
Yeah, that's what they did. Over a million Armenians.
It reminds me of what they...
It's unending. This
when
is...
When the Bosnian Muslims joined Hitler's Nazi party and formed the Waffen or Sword SS units, they created concentration camps and killed 800,000 Serbian Christians, did they not?
Absolutely. And it was Clinton who saved the Bosnians.
Yes, of course.
Clinton, who saved the Bosnians.
Yeah, the perpetrators of the genocide. When when we study the history of Egypt post when the Roman Empire came in and conquered Egypt, which at the time was, of course, pagan with their various sun god religions, Amun-Ra being the principal god, the deity. And then the Greeks and the Romans displaced the Greeks. Ultimately, Egypt was entirely a Byzantine community, which means that Christianity was from about, 300 CE through 700 CE was not the community of Egypt Copt or Byzantine Christian?
It was, until the Muslims came.
Okay, so it would have been 100% essentially. Well, actually, there were a lot of Jews there, so it would have probably been 10% Jewish and 90% Byzantine Christian. So then Muhammad's death and the Muslims go on a rampage. That's when they killed 250 million people. And they as savages, went through the Middle East and Northern Africa. They then either murdered or exiled or enslaved the Christians in Egypt, leaving only a tiny remnant. Is that correct?
No.
Okay.
Can I correct you?
Sure.
They did. What happened, they did not replace the Christians. They they had them pay an onerous jizya.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of paying the onerous jizya, hundreds of thousands of Christians converted to Islam.
Well, they gave them a choice.
The Jews in Persia, the Jews in North Africa, the Jews in the Yemen, they didn't have to exterminate them.
Yeah.
They forced them to convert.
Actually, they gave them a choice. We will exterminate you, and many chose to die. You can convert to Islam, or we will rob you of all of your dignity, of all of your property, and all of your money. And you can live in worse conditions than a destitute animal. Is
correct.
That basically
that's
what
exactly
happened?
What
yeah. And so, why is it that in this mythical place we call Palestine in Israel, that these mythical people known as the Palestinians ought to have a right to the place of Israel when the Muslims did this to the the Copt Christians and are continuing to perpetrate a genocide on them? Do I sense some hypocrisy here?
Hypocrisy is not even the word. I mean, this is beyond hypocrisy. This is beneath contempt. I mean, there's nothing to describe here.
So,
part and parcel of this land. They
of course.
Are conquerors. You know, something else I've got to mention,
yeah,
please, with
sure.
all your respect.
Please. Yeah.
There are 80 million Muslim or so-called Arab Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
They are not Arab.
No.
In no time in history
did
the conquering people become a majority. Never.
Really? Yeah, correct.
They Arabized the Egyptians. They Arabized the Algerians. They Arabized the North Africans, the Moroccans, the Tunisians.
Yeah, may I give you a modest correction here. The reason that Arab and Muslim have become synonymous is because Muslims recognize that they cannot defend Islam, that Islam is indefensible. And so what they can do is they can attack the messenger. They can use the ad hominem argument if they cloak Islam in a race and call and make Islam and Arabic and Arab synonymous, so that if you attack Islam, the religion, which is despicable, you are seen as being a racist and a bigot and attacking the race of Arabs. And they have caused there to be this impression that Muslims are all Arabs, when that is just not the case.
It is not the case. It has never been the case. But as you said, this is the falsehood. This is the deception. And it's been succeeding for the last 1,400 years. And it's succeeding today in the 21st century, where everybody has information available at the click of a mouse.
So I'm going to ask you a question. So America claims to be this Christian nation, and America invades Iraq, and the government that it imposes in Iraq allows a genocide where 80% of the Christian population has been annihilated, and we don't even hear a echo of this genocide in our news or from our politicians. But America created an invasion of Iraq whereby 1.2, 1.3 million Christians diminished to 200,000 or 300,000, and we don't talk about it. We don't even take responsibility for it. And here we have in Egypt exactly the same thing happening, where one regime replaces another and the Christians are dying as a result of genocidal rage, and no one seems to care.
But they are not caring. I mean, this is the most remarkable thing. I mean, I've been asking the same question many, many times in radio interviews. The Obama administration doesn't mention anything. Hillary Clinton never mentioned anything. Congress doesn't say anything. Many of the Christian churches in America don't say anything. And the Vatican doesn't say anything. How all of a sudden those people completely forget about the Christians, and yet they concentrate on the rights of the Palestinians, who are the enemies of these people?
What happened when the United States intervened in Israeli politics and decided to grant the terrorists their own territory to administer? And so they took over much of the West Bank and Gaza and told the Israelis that you can have no voice here, that the Palestinian Authority would be the voice of the mythical people known as the Palestinians, and that Israel, you could not interfere with them. And when they did that, you went from approximately 20% of those of the people living within the West Bank, Gaza, and Israel collectively being Christians, to now it is less than 1%. Genocide.
And nobody says anything, Yada.
Yeah.
This is remarkable. They keep talking about the rights of the Palestinians, but they don't say anything about the rights of the Christians in Palestine, so-called Palestine.
Yeah, well, there aren't any more.
They don't say anything. It's amazing.
There aren't any more of them left. Now, let's turn to Syria. I'm sure you've read the news that Assad is being accused of deploying chemical weapons and killing up to 1,000 people. Personally, I don't believe Assad used chemical weapons to kill 1,000 people, because while he is a ruthless dictator, he isn't stupid, and that was a suicidal move if he were to have done it. I think that the rebels themselves deployed the sarin gas for the express purpose, because they knew that they were losing, that there was no hope of the rebellion anymore, and that they wanted to bring Europe and the United States in. And they knew that Obama needed an excuse to go to war. They knew that France Holliday needed an excuse to go to war. They knew that Cameron of the UK, all of these guys were so scandal prone right at the moment that they all needed an excuse to go to war, and they set this up. But what happens if we support the rebels and the rebels prevail in Syria? What happens to the Christians? Will IQ Irasuli answer that question when we return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. We're talking with IQ Irasuli. At the end of the break, I ask IQ a rhetorical question. I'd like him to answer that question. And then I want to go back to something that I think is fairly profound, the realization that Assad didn't perpetrate this gas attack, and what it ultimately means for the fate of the world. So what is the fate of Christians? Should the jihadists, the rebels, most of whom are foreign fundamentalist Muslims armed by Saudi Arabia and Qatar, what happens if they prevail and take over that country from Assad?
There will be a slaughterhouse. First of all, there will be no Christians left. Second, there will be no Alawis left. Third, there will be no Shia left.
Yeah, they'll kill them all.
The Sunnis will survive.
Yeah, they'll kill them all.
They'll kill them all.
And they'll rape all of the women in the process, and enslave the children.
I mean, that's part and parcel of the equation.
Yeah. And there's a reason that part of that is actually good, and it sounds harsh for me to say that the wiping out of the Shia Muslims is a good thing, but here's the reality of all of that. If the prophecy that Yahweh gave regarding Ishmael, that his hand will be raised against his brother and his brother's hand will be raised against him, and he will live in hostility with the whole world, if it wasn't for the fact that Sunnis and Shias are killing one another right now, then their focus would be on Israel, and we would already be involved in World War III. So it's a throttling mechanism as they kill one another that keeps us delayed on their unified attack on Israel. You said something you mirrored something that I've come to realize. You don't think there's any chance in the world that Assad perpetrated this chemical attack, do you?
No chance in hell. He's not stupid.
Right.
Let me explain to Americans. I come from Iraq, so it's my turf. The Muslims, the followers of Muhammad, will sacrifice their mothers and children without hesitation, because their mothers and children, when they sacrifice them, they will go to heaven, for as long as this sacrifice will create enough momentum to expand Islam. So, by blaming the sarin or the gas warfare against Assad, they will try to bring the Europeans and Americans against Assad to destroy Assad so that they will take over. And I'll tell you something else. After they take Syria, Nobody will be safe in Europe, and nobody will be safe in America. Not a single human being. By the way, we were discussing a few seconds ago, the man who killed the cops, he killed them in America, in New Jersey. He didn't have to go to Egypt to kill them.
That's right.
He killed them in America.
All right. By the way, IQ, I'm going to have a small disagreement with you on this. I don't think that that the sarin gas deployment in Syria was wholly planned by or perpetrated by Sunni Muslim jihadists against their own for the purpose of luring America and Europe into the war.
Okay.
I think America and Europe were complicit in the attack. I suspect that either we provided the gas, we provided the means to deploy the gas, that we knew it was going to happen, we wanted it to happen, that Holliday in France, that Cameron and in the UK and Obama in the United States are desperate for a war because their administrations are all enveloped in failure and scandal. I think this is. I don't think they did it independently. I think the case is far more sinister.
Okay, but yeah, you're missing completely the Russians. They're not stupid either. Putin is a very, very powerful man.
Yep.
If he knew that the Americans and Europeans have done such a thing, I don't think he'd keep his mouth shut.
Well, you know,
I'm being here, the devil's advocate.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You are my devil's advocate. I'm your devil's advocate.
Yeah, and my big concern, of course, in Syria is that Muslims killing Muslims. Well, you know, it's a shame that any life is lost, but those lives have no future. There is no hope for any of them. My big issue, of course, in Syria is that it's a proxy war, and you've got the United States and Europe on one side, and Russia on and China on the other side. My sense is that. Putin would love for America and Europe to be drawn into that war because they know that it will be a killing field for America, that it will be for Western Europe and for America. It'll be the final economic collapse of those nations trying to support that war, that it'll be mass suicide for those countries. And so it is actually in Russia's interest for us to engage in that war.
Yeah, that's I have to agree with you now. I really have to agree with you. It's very clever, yes. It's possible.
Yes.
He drags them in like what's happening in Afghanistan.
Oh, he didn't even have to drag them in. He didn't even have to drag them in.
Yes.
That is correct.
God bless them.
My pleasure, IQ. It's always enjoyable to talk to you. I wish there was more of you in the world and that we could spend even more time together. Here is the voice of truth and reason, of compassion in a very troubled world.